All right, hey, it's always a pleasure to talk to our boy George Stoya from Sooner Scoop. George, this is a lot better than interviewing you outside in the rain.
Yeah, I was about to say, I think the last time I was on the show, well, maybe I was up there for media days. I think Eddie and I came on together, but that was a good time there down in Florida. That's coming up, too. That's only a couple months away that we'll be down in Destin, so...
Right. And hey, I tried to drag Cousin Shane down there. He didn't want to go. And then he got so upset with me because he found out there was a golf course across the street from the Hilton. So he's coming this year, to be sure. If he's not there, I'm not allowed to go without Shane. So just so you know. But hey, we were talking off air. So much has happened with Oklahoma in recent weeks. But this probably feels like a year ago. I want to rewind just to the playoff game, getting to experience that in Norman. I know it didn't go the way Oklahoma fans want, but how awesome was it to go into a season asking, hey, is Brent Venables even going to be the coach in 26? That's a long way to go from that to hosting a college football playoff game, 50 cents there. What was that like?
Dude, it was awesome. The atmosphere was spectacular, and you know, really all season, the home atmosphere with the teams and the programs that came to Norman was awesome. I go back to the Michigan game early in the season, week two. That was great. But to host a playoff game, I think it was a really cool experience for the fans. That, you know, look, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that OU fans have had it just extremely tough, but I do think that since Lincoln Riley left, there has been this different view on Oklahoma football from a national perspective that, hey, they aren't a top of the mountain or they aren't a national title contender. And then obviously you had the season, you know, a couple of years ago with Jackson Arnold and everything fell apart. You had to fire Seth Luttrell midseason. And then you all of a sudden have this gauntlet of a schedule that, you know, myself included, I remember going on your show, Mike, and going on Feinbaum and saying, hey, they just got to get to like 8 wins, you know, like that's, if you can get to 8 wins, that's a good season. And for them to go on the run the way they did, especially in November, you know, I think after they lost to Texas and with John Mateer's hand and everything that went down with that, and then they come home and they lose to Ole Miss in a close game, I think everybody just kind of was like, well, that's what it is. You got to go on the road to Knoxville. You got to go to Tuscaloosa. And to win those games the way they did, you know, with the defense scoring touchdowns and winning almost in like this like magical fashion, like that nobody expected OU to be able to do this. And to have that kind of almost validation of like, okay, like Brent Venables is building this the right way. They've got a great defense. They've got a quarterback that, look, depending on who you ask in the OU fan base, has a different opinion of him, but he's still a good player when he's healthy. At least we believe he is, right? You know, you feel like Ben Arbuckle took some steps, right? Maybe it wasn't the best offensive year that you wanted, but still, it was much better than the year before. And then you have Jim Nagy in building this roster, and we'll get into the portal stuff. But all of that leading to this playoff game, and yeah, it didn't go Oklahoma's way, but I think what we saw in that game, Mike, when they went up 17-0, is like, that's what OU can be, right? When OU is clicking and the defense is playing great and John Mateer's playing well and you've got guys stepping up, making plays, like OU can be that team. Now they fell apart and you got to figure that part out. And I think that that's what Oklahoma spent their offseason doing, is figuring out where can they improve while also maintaining the things that they were good at. So I thought it was a fantastic season. Again, it didn't end the way that Oklahoma wanted it to. They would have got their ass beat in the Rose Bowl if they had won the game, right? I don't think they were beating Indiana. As much as OU fans looked at the matchup as maybe favorable because it was Indiana, now we all know Indiana was amazing. But in the end, it was awesome. 50 Cent, like you said, it was awesome. He was there. The atmosphere is the best I've ever seen. And, you know, I'm 29. I've been going to games in Norman since I was a little kid. I think it's the best I've ever seen, at least in terms of pregame hype and everything that went into it. And when they went up 17-0, it was like, OU's back. They're on the top of the world. And unfortunately it fell apart for them, but it was awesome. And I think it's a season now, Mike, and we can get into this stuff that you can build on. Like if you're Brent Venables, this is something you can build as a foundation moving forward.
Mm-hmm. And I certainly believe that was the expectation, George, when Oklahoma hired GM Jim Nagy, that he would have that part of the operation running smoothly. And I believe that we've already seen that. You can tell the audience better than I, but what's your thoughts on Oklahoma, their first portal cycle under Jim Nagy? Did they lose anybody that they really, really wanted to keep retention wise? And I heard him say that he had to do about 80 new contracts, which he said in the NFL you do on a good year, you do 20. So what can you speak to the job that Jim Nagy and his crew have done?
Yeah, I think Jim's done a fantastic job. And he's got a huge front office staff, and there's several guys that have helping him. Stacy Ford has been a huge person. I think his exact title is like director of scouting. I know Charlie Parkinson, he's another scout that has been helping them a ton this year. Taylor Redd, the assistant GM, Lake Dawson, who spent years in the NFL. That whole front office staff has, I think, done a really good job. Now we'll have to see how it plays out. I think when you look at who they lost in the portal, there's certainly some guys that I think from the outside you'd be like, oh, why did they lose that guy? Like a Kobe McKenzie, right? Started several games for him at Mike linebacker this past year. Look, he was kind of getting lost in the rotation. He's going to go to Northwestern, get a master's degree there. Makes a lot of sense for him. I think that he would have played some for Oklahoma next year, but wouldn't have been a starter. And in today's transfer portal age, these guys want to start. And for Oklahoma, he's kind of gotten passed up. They went out and got Cole Sullivan, one of the top linebackers in the portal from Michigan, who I think is going to be a starter for him. So it makes sense. Zion Kearney, another guy, a wide receiver, young wide receiver that I think you asked some people in the building and they're like, yeah, we thought he was going to be a really good player for us. And he still could be, right? He ends up, I think, at Washington. He's a guy that if you told me he ends up being a nice player, he could be. But Oklahoma has to bet on guys that are going to, have already proven that they can produce, right? And we can get into the class, but you look at some of the guys they went out and got at wide receiver, Parker Livingstone from Texas, who I think's a huge get, somebody that they just have not had in terms of his size, athleticism, what he can do going up and catching the football. I think that he was a huge get. Trell Harris from Virginia, an all ACC type player. Like, they upgraded the wide receiver position. And if you watched Oklahoma last year, one area they really struggled, other than Isaiah Satania, who they also were able to retain, an all SEC type player, they didn't really have any other threats on offense. It was basically the Isaiah Satania show, and he saved their season against Missouri and LSU. So, they were able to keep him, and they're adding guys around him, which should open up some more for him and also just take some pressure off of him and John Mateer. I think that's the biggest thing. You look at what Jim Nagy's staff did, they attacked the problems that were an issue for Oklahoma this past year. Tight end, they got so much better at tight end. And we can talk about Jason Witten, which, again, the news just never has not stopped this offseason. They're in the middle of a cornerbacks coach search too right now. But going out and hiring a Hall of Famer and Jason Witten to coach your tight ends, huge upgrade there from a coaching position, and as well as the three guys that they got in the transfer portal. They got the kid from Tennessee, Van Dorsealer. I think he's going to end up playing a lot for Oklahoma. They get the tight end from Florida, Hayden Hansen, who was a starter for the last couple of years for them. Is he going to win the Mackey? No, but he upgrades that position tremendously to allow this offense to do some different stuff. Because I think when you think about Oklahoma this past year and the issues it had, they were too reliant on John Mateer to do everything. And I think John Mateer is a good player. I don't know if he's a great player. And I think to make him a great player, to elevate his game, you've got to surround him with more talent. And the offense just lacked that kind of talent. You return five offensive linemen that started for you this past year. You can build on that. They're young guys. Michael Fasusi at left tackle was a true freshman this last year. Ryan Foje, who started at right tackle, was also a true freshman. They're both back. Like, you have your starting center back. You have your starting guards back. Like, you have almost every single person back, and you've added some talent. That's where I think Jim Nagy and this group did a tremendous job. And you mentioned it, signing the 80 guys. They did a really good job at retaining their best players. Did they lose a few guys here and there that I'm sure they'd like to keep for depth pieces? Of course, everybody did in the transfer portal. But I think they've upgraded their talent on offense. They retained their best players that they could on defense, and they've added a few depth pieces that, again, you might not see them this year, but if you told me in a couple of years they developed into good players and contributors, I'd believe you. So I think they've done an excellent job.
Yeah, and you did a great job there. One name you didn't reference, though, I'm sure you know all about him, but they added, I really like the offensive lineman Harris from Arkansas they got.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if he'll even start, but I know he's capable of starting in this conference. So when you got that kind of depth on the offensive line, that could be huge in the fall. You did mention Parker Livingston. I did want to specifically ask you, have Oklahoma fans embraced him, or does he have too much Longhorn stank on him still?
Oh, they love him. Okay. They're all in on Parker. And, you know, I think that they love that, you know, he came to the, I get whatever side you're on, the dark side or the good side here in Norman. But they think he's a great player. I think a lot of people here can't believe that Texas, you know, didn't do all they could to hang on to him. And I don't know all the details behind the scenes on, you know, why he left Texas and all that. But all I know is that Indiana really wanted him. And if Kirk Cignetti signed off on him, then I think he's a really good player. And again, I don't know if he's going to be Oklahoma's leading wide receiver, but he just gives you something that Oklahoma really just hasn't had at the receiver position. His, you know, his frame, 6'4", he can run by you. Like, he does some stuff that Oklahoma just doesn't have. Again, you go watch OU last year, and yeah, they had Isaiah Satania, Deion Burks, who's going to get drafted, and he had some good moments this past year. Those guys aren't even 6 feet tall. You know, they didn't really have anybody that could go do that. So to add somebody like Parker, who I think can come in and he's going to be a starter from day one and really kind of help you out spreading the field. And again, give John Matera just another target, because it felt like so many times this last year, Mike, that Matera just didn't have anybody really to throw the ball to. Now, if you go back and watch the tape, he misses some guys that are open, but it also felt like he was a little conservative where he didn't want to take some shots down the field. Now you've got somebody that, hey, Parker Livingstone's got one-on-one cover. Just throw it up. See if he can't go make a play. We saw Indiana do that with Becker a lot this past year. I think that that's what Indiana saw in Livingstone, was kind of that replacement for Becker. So I thought he was a huge addition. And you mentioned Marion Harris from Arkansas. I failed to mention him. I think he's going to come in and probably be your starting right tackle. You can move the freshman Ryan Foje into guard, because they did lose the one starter they did lose was Fabechi Wiwu at right guard. He's kind of been a stalwart for Oklahoma on the offensive line the last couple of years, but everybody else is back. And you add a Marion Harris, who, you know, has been a starter for Arkansas the last couple of seasons. And I know Arkansas has not been any good. Their offense has been good, but this guy was one of the best offensive tackles in the portal. So I thought it was a huge get. And again, kind of shores up the trenches for Oklahoma on offense.
Well, speaking of that offense, where do you kind of see Ben Arbuckle after 1 year in the program? I don't know if you saw this. I ranked all the offensive coordinators recently in the SEC. I can't remember if I put him 10th or 11th. And, you know, again, that's not me like saying he's awful or anything. You know, my main takeaway from that exercise, George, was I don't know that we have a lot of good offensive coordinators in this conference right now. But do you think that's a fair grade? And what do you think of Ben Arbuckle after one season?
Well, I do think it's a fair grade. If anything, you're probably being, you look at what he did in 1 year, right? And you don't have a lot of data to go off of, but it wasn't the best. And ultimately, why Oklahoma got knocked out of the playoff was their offense wasn't good enough. I think we can all agree their defense was good enough. Like, it was a championship level defense. It's the reason they beat Tennessee and the reason they beat Alabama. And yes, the offense had moments, you know, late in the season that when they had to have it, they got it, right? But ultimately, the offense wasn't good enough. They couldn't run the football at all. You know, they didn't have a ton of talent at running back, it seemed. They also got, you know, banged up there. So that's part of the problem. The offensive line was okay. It was much better than it was a year ago, but still wasn't great. Mateer, you know, made too many mistakes in big moments. They didn't have a ton of playmakers on the outside, like I've said a couple times now. So it's not all on Ben Arbuckle, but there was definitely moments throughout the season that you're like, I don't know what they were trying to do there play calling wise. And so I think that it's more than a fair ranking. I would expect, though, if you're an Oklahoma fan, you have to hope that next year when SEC Mike puts out his, you know, top offensive coordinators in the SEC, that he makes a leap into the top, you know, half of the conference or the top five of the conference, because that's the expectation. I think you have to give him a little grace because it's his first year. He's got new personnel. Yes, he's got his quarterback, but his quarterback did break his hand, you know, early in the season. You had to deal with that. And obviously things went off the rails for a couple weeks there when that happened. But like, I do think that he can still make a lot of improvement. We saw a lot of really good stuff. And again, you go back and you watch the tape, there's a lot of plays that John Mateer just left out there where Ben Arbuckle's designing guys open, and Mateer just doesn't see him or misses him and makes a bad throw. So, you know, I think that it's if I had to give him like a letter grade, I'd probably give him like a C+. Like, he's passing for sure, right? You got to the college football playoff, you won 10 games, which no one expected you to do. You played some of the best defenses in the country throughout the season. I think that's one thing too that we saw over this past year is John Mateer and Ben Arbuckle adjusting in real time to playing good defenses. I put the stat out there late in the season, and I can't remember it exactly, but I want to say at Washington State the year prior before coming to Oklahoma, they faced one top 50 defense the entire season. Oklahoma alone last year, they faced seven top 50 defenses in the country. So it was a huge adjustment for both Ben Arbuckle and John Mateer, figuring out how to go against way better defenses, better players, better schemes, all of those things. So again, he passed, but I think this year with the new talent that they've acquired, the guys coming back, Mateer coming back, and a huge offseason for him, I think the expectation is for them to take a pretty good jump this next year.
Yeah, and you may have just answered this, but what's the confidence level that John Mateer specifically will take that jump? Because, you know, I just follow the SEC, but you just look all across this conference, it's generally the year two where these guys come in and at quarterback and make a big leap, whether it's Hendon Hooker, Diego Pavia, Jane Daniels, Jackson Dart. I mean, the list goes on and on. It's usually year two where these guys make a jump. What's your confidence that that John Mateer can be a lot more consistent? That I think that's critical for him. Just be more consistent week in, week out.
Well, it depends on who you ask. But if you're asking me, I'm confident that he's going to be better. I don't know how much better, right? If you ask some OU fans, they'll tell you he's not going to get any better and that OU screwed. But
why did they upgrade in the portal?
Yeah. There's, I mean, you know how the fan bases are. I mean, it was like when the season was over, it's like, oh, you should go out and get another quarterback. It's like, who are you getting in the transfer portal that's just immediately better than John Mateer? And maybe there was somebody. I don't know. But I think that I do think he can improve, and kind of like you said, it's not about like him needing to be a Heisman Trophy candidate next year, right? Like that in my mind, like I don't think he's going to get to that point, but can he throw, you know, four less interceptions and four more touchdowns? And how much of a difference would that make for Oklahoma? And you add in, maybe you can run the football more efficiently. Like if you do those little things where, hey, maybe you don't throw a pick six against Alabama, right? Or you throw an interception late against Tennessee that nearly cost you the game. Like, you take those away, maybe Oklahoma is playing deeper into the season. Maybe they are sustaining more drives, or they're scoring a little, you know, more points. Like, I can't remember what their ending season was in terms of, you know, points per game, but I want to say they needed to be about, if they were 4 points more per game, like they're in the top 30 in the country. And it's like, that's where you need to be. So I think he can get better. I think everything that, you know, is wrong with John Mateer, quote unquote wrong, like is fixable. Like, I think he needs to work on his footwork, which a lot of, you know, quarterbacks obviously, you know, have to work on that. I don't think he's going to suddenly change his throwing motion. I know a lot of people out there want him to just totally change his throwing motion. I don't think that's going to happen, but I do think he can clean up his footwork, stay in the pocket, like work on that kind of stuff this offseason, stay in the pocket a little bit longer. And then also just understanding where the ball needs to go, because there's just too many instances where, hey, he had time to throw the ball and a guy's running open and he just doesn't see it. And like that stuff, like, you know, maybe it's correctable, maybe it's not, but I do think that's something, if you have a whole nother off season, you get to work with some of these receivers, I do think you can correct some of that. Again, he's not going to be perfect. I don't think he's going to go out there and win the Heisman Trophy next year, but do I think he can be a little bit better? Yeah, of course I do. Like, if you, again, take away a few interceptions, add a few more touchdowns, like, I think that that can win you 10 games and get you back into the playoff and maybe even get a little bit further in the playoff. And we saw, you know, look, I don't think he's going to be Fernando Mendoza, but I do think that he can be like Carson Beck. I do. I really do believe that. And I know Carson Beck finished the season extremely strong, but like Carson Beck had moments where he looked terrible. And then he had moments where he just has to throw the ball out to Malachi Toney and let him go. And I think that that's what OU needs to do, is like, hey, surround this guy with some good talent and just let him get the ball to him. I don't know. Maybe that's simplifying it too much, Mike, but I do think that John Mateer can get better. We've seen it before here in Norman. Dylan Gabriel, his first year at Oklahoma in 2022 was an okay year. He was all right. 2023, he was fantastic. He got a lot better. And then he was even better at Oregon. So you've seen guys later in their career get better. And I'm just going to assume that John Mateer can do that. I just don't know how much.
I'm fired up to tell you about our new partner here, Ultra. Ultra Pouches. Go check them out. TakeUltra.com. Promo code that SEC. You can see it right there on the screen. THATSEC. Get your 15% off. TakeUltra.com. And what are these Ultra? They're pouches, brother. Completely nicotine free, caffeine free, but they're packed with nootropics, whatever that is. Shane and I, we can't get enough of our Ultra pouches over here. They help with mental clarity, enhance focus, give you the same kick as a nicotine patch without the side effects, if you know what I'm saying. So go check them out. Again, TakeUltra.com, promo code THATSEC to get you 15% off. And, we are fired up about these Ultra pouches. So, again, go over to TakeUltra.com, use that promo code THATSEC to get you 15% off for first-time users. Help out the show. Let them know that we sent you over there by using that promo code, that SEC, over at TakeUltra.com. There's a link in the show notes as well if you want to check them out. And there's also a link for our friends over at Brunt. Brunt Workwear. Of course, they sent us over some fancy-dancy boots. They said, hey, show the boots. Well, here it is. I mean, you can't get a better boot than this, can you? I mean, look at this. This thing's freaking massive. It's the size of my face. Over here at bruntworkwear.com, promo code SEC to get you $10 off your order. They got your boots, apparel. What we really need right now is a cold weather gear. They got you covered. Hoodies, crew necks, waterproof boots, soft toe, composite toe, limited time only. If you go over to bruntworkwear.com, put in that promo code SEC, you get you $10 off. You can't beat it. Shade likes to say, we ain't working men. We like to look like we are, though, and we look like it by going over to Brunt, bruntworkwear.com, promo code SEC to get you $10 off. Can't beat it. Can't beat it. I know for Sooner Scoop, you've been all over this, but I'm just kind of wondering if you can explain it for my audience, because it seems pretty ridiculous, but the current status of Owen Heineke, who's trying to get another year, this isn't like Joey Aguilar trying to get year eight in college football. Can you break down what's going on there?
Yeah, so Owen Heineke, he's a walk-on for Oklahoma at linebacker. He started his career playing college athletics at Ohio State playing lacrosse in 2021. And when he was a really good lacrosse player, but he only played in three games totaling about 15 minutes of playing time. It was all garbage time, so about 5 minutes per game. And it was like, you know, Ohio State's way up. He gets in the game late. Well, in lacrosse, they don't have like the redshirt rule. So that counted against him. So that counted a year of eligibility against him. After one season, he was like, hey, I want to play football. And he's from Oklahoma. He actually went to my high school. So I know him pretty well. I know his family pretty well. He transfers. He walks on at Oklahoma, doesn't play his first year. He tears up his knee, or I think it was his knee, or he had some sort of season ending injury before fall camp even started. Doesn't receive a medical hardship, so he has to just kind of burn a red shirt that year in 2022. Then in 2023, 2024, he plays like a key special teams role, plays in every single game for Oklahoma, basically being on kickoff, punt return, all that stuff, played every special teams, was a really good player. And then this year, just suddenly comes onto the scene, and he had been working his way in behind the scenes, was kind of in a, you know, backup role at linebacker, but didn't play much, again, garbage time. And then this last year, he really earned a role and became a starter by the end of the season for Oklahoma, moved into that Mike linebacker spot, was a really great player, a big reason why the defense was so good. He assumed, during the season that he was going to still get that medical hardship for 2022 and that the 2021 lacrosse wouldn't be counted against him. He assumed wrong. And the NCAA is counting those, you know, 15 minutes of lacrosse playing time against him from 2021. And the 2022 season is counted as a redshirt. So he's appealing. His petition was denied, which was expected, but he's now appealing to try and get an extra year. And his pitch basically is like, hey, I understand that the lacrosse year counts against me, but like I want 4 years to play college football. I didn't get my medical hardship in 2022, despite, you know, a lot of guys getting a medical hardship. And so he's trying to get that extra year of eligibility. I don't know if he's going to get it. He had a fantastic season this past year, got invited to the Senior Bowl, just crushed it down at the Senior Bowl. So I think he's going to get drafted, even if he doesn't get this, you know, this appeal and get an extra year. And I don't think he's going to take legal action. You see all these guys, you know, suing and getting the restraining order. I think that he's kind of like, hey, if I don't get it, like, I'm going to go to the NFL. I'll be fine. But I think he would love to come back for another season. He really only got to play, you know, like actual meaningful time on defense this last year. And it was in a rotational, you know, way for most of the season. So I think that he would love to come back, put some more tape on there, and also just play for Oklahoma. You know, I think that it would be really cool. But he's working on his master's. I just don't, you know, at this point, I don't think the NCAA is going to give it to him. They're kind of cracking down on this fifth year of eligibility, unless you sue, and then, you know, all hell breaks loose and there's nothing really the NCAA can do about it. So I don't think he's going to. I don't know that for sure. I just kind of think he's like, hey, man, I got to get ready for the NFL if they're not going to give me the other year.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that makes sense. But I was going to say, but you went right into it. I mean, just get a Norman Judge and we're good, you know?
Yeah.
Hey, I don't know if you've seen this, but a friend of the show, Clark Brooks, SEC StatCat, he works for On3 now. He rated the top 100 players. I think he's going to all the way down to 300. He posted on On3. He's got the best Oklahoma player next season, according to him, David Stone. What's your thoughts on that? Would you agree, disagree, or where are you at with David Stone? And he had him as like the number 20 player in the country.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think he's a stud. This is a future first round draft pick, and he's going into his junior year. And you know, his freshman year, he didn't play much. Kind of was, you know, I think he played like 100 snaps and would come in. I think he played a little bit late in the season when they had some injuries, and he was a 5-star. Like everybody expected him to be a great player. Like this isn't some like, you know, unheard of story. But he took a huge jump this past year. Ended up being probably their best defensive tackle alongside Grayson Halton. You know, Jaden Jackson was really great early in the season. He kind of played through some injuries late in the year and just wasn't himself. And Dominic Williams was just kind of, you know, just a staple, really good up front. But David Stone was a difference maker. You know, he was somebody that I think you saw tremendous growth. I can only imagine he's going to get even better this year. And I expect him to probably enter the draft after next season, a year early. He's that good. And I totally agree. I mean, I think he's going to end up being a first round draft pick. And if you told me he's the best defensive tackle in college football next season, it wouldn't surprise me.
Mm-hmm. And then you kind of already went into this, but Oklahoma just lost corners coach Jay Ajayi, I believe is how you say his name, to the Buffalo Bills. I think that speaks pretty highly of what the NFL thinks of Brett Venables and the coaching they have on the defensive side of the football. How attractive do you think that position is for someone to replace him on Oklahoma staff? And how big of a surprise, if at all, was it that they did get Jason Witten, who we all know is a Hall of Fame tight end, but I didn't realize he was coaching in high school down in Texas, I believe.
Yeah, no, I think for Jay Valai, who left for the Bills, that was a move that, like, I'm not saying it was expected, but his name's come up a couple times. And I also think, like you said, it speaks volumes of Brent Venables' staff. The fact that they've been able to hold on to this defensive staff for as long as they have the last 4 years is kind of surprising, because the defense has improved remarkably every year. But like when you have a top, you know, five, top 10 defense in the country, you're probably going to lose some of your staff. And, you know, Valai is somebody that has done a really good job with the cornerbacks. It's been a really solid group. He's brought in a ton of talent. Like, I think it's kind of a, not a big loss, but certainly a loss for the staff. And I think it's an extremely attractive job. I think that they could go out and not just get anybody they want, but probably get some of the top names if they really want to. I'm very curious who they end up hiring. It sounds like Brent Venables kind of has an idea of who he wants to hire for the position, but nothing's been made official yet. But I think you look at that room and the talent that the coach is going to acquire. You've got Eli Bowen and Cortland Guillory, both your starters back from a season ago. Jacoby Johnson, who's been a really good player for you, you're bringing in some really talented young freshman corners. You brought in a couple corners from the transfer portal. Like, it's a super talented room. So it would be a very attractive job. And the guy that just left went to the NFL and became a co-defensive coordinator and cornerbacks coach. So like, you can come to Oklahoma, work for a couple years, and go get a great job, especially on defense because of the way this thing is trending right now. So I think it's very attractive. I think Oklahoma's going to make a hire here very soon. And I'm very curious to see who it is, because I do think that they could go out and get somebody really good. As for Jason Witten, you know, we heard it. It's crazy. And this feels like a year ago that this happened. But when Joe John Finley was fired, Jason Witten was the first name that we kind of heard. And I didn't really believe it. Like, I was like, there's no way they're hiring Jason Witten. And I knew he had been coaching, you know, down in Dallas at Liberty Christian and had done a phenomenal job there. And obviously his son Cooper Witten is, you know, the top linebacker in the country in 2027. And OU's been kind of the leader in that recruitment alongside Tennessee. And so I was like, oh, maybe there's some sort of connection there. But we had heard some other names. You know, Brian Ellis at Alabama was somebody that we thought would be a candidate or a very strong candidate. But Witten's name just kind of stayed in the hunt. I just don't think any of us believed it would happen. And I didn't know, you know, did Jason Witten really want to coach college football? Did he really want to get into that? And now we're finding out, yeah, he did. You know, he wanted to get into it. It's kind of like Mike Vrabel did years ago, right? Where he got in, got his foot in the door, was a position coach and worked his way up. I think Jason Witten's kind of on that same track. I think he's going to come in. He's going to do a really good job. I trust that, you know, look, he's never coached college football, but I trust the guy that was maybe the arguably the greatest tight end of all time to coach the position. He's going to be able to recruit. Oklahoma's already gone out and, you know, started offering some of the best tight ends in the country, you know, in the 2027 class and 2028 class. Like, he's going to be able to walk into any room, any house and say, hey, I want you to come play for Oklahoma. And the kid's going to listen, right? Because he's Jason freaking Witten. And so I think that he's going to be able to do that. And I think he's going to be able to elevate the room and teach them not only how to be, you know, obviously good receivers, which Oklahoma hasn't had at the tight end position, but also great blockers. So I thought it was a tremendous hire. I get it that he doesn't have any coaching experience really at this level. But if you told me in 2 or 3 years, this guy is getting, you know, offers to be, you know, an offense coordinator, or even a head coach at the college level, it would not surprise me. Like, I think he's going to rise extremely quickly in this profession.
Yeah. And credit Oklahoma for, it takes a lot to beat Tennessee on the recruiting trail, but I guess hiring the dad, that'll get it done.
Yep.
All right. Hey, last, two things here for you, George, really appreciate your time. What's your thoughts on this, new AD hire, Roger Denny from Illinois? What do you think the Sooners are getting there?
Yeah, it's kind of the opposite of the Jason Witten hire, right? You hire Jason Witten, and it's a huge splash. Everybody's talking about it. Adam Schefter's tweeting about it. It's a big deal. And then you hire Roger Denny from Illinois, the deputy athletic director. Everybody's like, who? Who the heck is this guy? You know, former lawyer. And I think when you look into his background, it makes a lot of sense. I think that with the way that college athletics is going and the lawsuits and NIL and all of that stuff, the transfer portal, like, you look at his background, he was doing sports law for 15 years, working with major Big Ten universities on coaches' contracts, collective bargaining, media rights. Like, he has an extensive background in dealing with a lot of the legalities that come with college athletics right now. And when Illinois hired him, it was a week after NIL went into effect. And he's been a huge part of helping with the players' contracts, you know, keeping guys there. You know, he was directly over football and helping Brett Bielema. And I spoke to Brett Bielema about him, and he was like, this guy was as important as anybody in our entire office in terms of helping the football program, you know, have the success that Illinois had the last couple of years, which I think is they've had 19 wins in the last two seasons, which is the most over a 2-year span in the program's history. And, you know, basically Brett Bielema said Roger Denny is had a hand in that, like a huge hand in that. So I think he's going to be able to come in, help Jim Nagy, help Brent Venables, give them the resources, provide the support. Like, he's not going to be Joe Castiglione, who is, you know, obviously a longtime, you know, sports administrator and, you know, out in the public all the time and talking and all of that. I think he's going to be a bit more behind the scenes. You know, I'm curious what he's going to do with the men's basketball program, because it's a disaster right now, and we can get into the new arena and all of that, which is great news. But like, they just lost their 9th in a row last night to Kentucky, and it's just going off the rails. And he's going to have to make a really tough decision. Well, I don't even know if it's a tough decision, but he's going to have to make a decision with Porter Moser and his future. But I do think that overall, it's a pretty good hire. I don't think we're really going to know though until a few years from now, like what the success looks like of some of these athletic programs. And OU's had tremendous success. You know, I think everybody looks at it as football, right? But they've obviously had great success in softball, baseball's been really good over the last few years. Women's basketball is a, you know, top 10 program in the country right now. They're phenomenal. Men's basketball has not been good, but, you know, has a history of being good, so you can get it back on track. Gymnastics, like, he's also got a tall task in terms of continuing that success, not only in football, which is obviously king, you got to keep that going, but all the other athletic programs. So I think it's a, on paper, good hire. I liked talking to him. He's definitely a lawyer, a very smart guy, you know, not the most charismatic person, but I do think that in terms of his background, he'll be able to help Oklahoma prepare for whatever's next in college athletics.
Such, it's interesting given that background, but I think that's obviously where things are going. So yeah. It's an interesting, but possibly a cutting edge hire. All right, last thing. This Rock Creek Entertainment District, 8,000 seat arena for men's and women's basketball, and I would assume concerts and things of that nature. We saw the renderings that you posted. That looks pretty awesome. Can you explain, though, why does the Oklahoma Supreme Court had to get involved in all this?
Dude, it's been a battle for OU and the city of Norman, because this project is really, the city of Norman is going to be completing this project. OU is partnering with them and helping fund it. You know, I think like 80% of the funding, which is going to be a $1.2 billion entertainment district. The arena alone is going to be $330 million. And that was projections from a couple years ago. So that could be even increased from that. But OU is helping pay for a good chunk of it. They're going to be the anchor tenant. They're basically going to be renting this arena from the city of Norman. And the reason this whole thing's gone through so many different legal battles is there's a group of residents in the city of Norman that don't want this thing. They don't want it. They don't want to, you know, they think that they're going to have to pay for it, which I don't actually think the taxpayers are going to have to pay for it. It's funded through like TIFs and things like that, which are way over my head. But anyways, there's a group of residents that don't want it. You know, they wanted to go to a public vote because it didn't. It went through the city council. The city council passed it in a 5-4 vote, so very close. And it was like a huge deal a couple years ago. This big city council meeting got approved, and then these residents that didn't want it basically filed a petition of, hey, we want to take this thing to a public vote. They got enough signatures on the petition, but then a district judge said, hey, there wasn't enough evidence that these, you know, were, you know, rightfully, you know, signatures or whatever, you know, valid signatures. And then that judge, you know, said it's not sufficient enough. So then they took it to the Oklahoma Supreme Court, and we've been waiting for, I think, like a year to hear from the Oklahoma Supreme Court on what their ruling was on this petition to take it to a public vote. And they also ruled it was insufficient. So now Oklahoma finally, you know, 2 years later, can start building this thing along with the city of Norman, who will be actually building it, which I think that they're going to start construction here soon. They were hoping to have this done by the 2027-28 basketball season. I think that's going to be pushed back a couple of years because of all the legal battles, and they haven't even started construction yet. So it's a big win for OU, and really, I think the city of Norman, it's a really good thing for the city of Norman. It's going to provide a lot of jobs and, you know, new bars and restaurants. I think there's going to be new apartment complexes, and then obviously the arena itself looks like it's going to be state of the art. And Oklahoma's really struggled, Mike, since the Thunder have come to town, and I'm a huge Thunder fan myself. But like, when with Oklahoma City being 30 minutes away, I think that they've really struggled, especially when the team's not any good, that with people to come to the games and the interest, because people are all bought in on the Thunder, right? And rightfully so. The Thunder are the best team in the NBA, and they're a lot of fun to watch and all that. So I think like this new arena maybe can spark some more interest. But also, at the end of the day, the basketball team's got to go win. If OU basketball wins basketball games, people show up. And I think we've seen that over the last few years, over the last couple of decades. Like, if the team sucks, people aren't going to go. And the team sucks right now. It doesn't matter where they play. They could play, you know, in Midwest City High School's gym. Nobody's going to come, right? Or if, you know, people will come if they are good. So I think that that ultimately is what it is. But I do think that it's still a win for whoever the next head coach is. If Porter Moser is fired, like, to be able to say, hey, we're going to have this new nice arena right down the street from campus. It's off campus, but it's still going to be in this cool entertainment district. I think it's a great recruiting tool.
Oh, hey, George, I apologize. One more real quick. I don't know if you saw this, but I did my updated record predictions for all the teams, and I put Oklahoma at 10-2 with a win over Texas. Is that crazy? Feel free to tell me I'm crazy, and not that you're guaranteeing 10 and 2 or anything, but any response to that?
No, I don't think it's crazy at all. I think Oklahoma can definitely go 10 and 2. You know, and boy, it would be great if they could beat Texas for their sake. I know the fans are tired of losing to Texas, and especially getting blown out by Texas down in the Cotton Bowl. But I think they can do that. I think that the schedule is really difficult. You know, it's like it is every year in the SEC. And I love these people are like, oh, the SEC hasn't won the national championship in a few years. That doesn't mean the SEC is still not really freaking hard to play in, right? I mean, Oklahoma's got to go to Georgia. They got to go to Florida, who I think's done a really good job at kind of build. I don't know how good they're going to be in year one under Summerall, but I think they've done a good job. They host Kentucky, who I think Will Stein has done a phenomenal job at trying to piece together that roster. We'll see what happens with Chambliss and Ole Miss, but they're coming back to Norman next year. They got to go on the road to Michigan in non-conference, which I think that Kyle Whittingham's gonna get that thing going. It's just how quickly can he do it? So they've got a really difficult schedule, but I like Oklahoma's roster. They retained their best players on defense that they could. They got better on offense, I think. Their special teams unit, they got Tate Sandell back in his short shorts. Like, he's gonna be great. The Lou Groza Award winner. Like, I think that they've got a really good group. They've been able to retain most of their coaching staff. I think Brent Venables has some momentum. It's just a matter of, you know, winning some close one-score games like they did this last year down the stretch. Can they do that again? And I certainly think, I don't know what the over-under is probably going to be. I would bet maybe around 8.5, 9 is what their over-under is at. So you're taking the over, but I don't think you're crazy at all. I think they could definitely do that. I'm very curious, too, about Texas, because I think that on paper they got better in some spots. I'm still worried about their offensive line a bit. They need to get a lot better there. They need to have some development, but I think Arch Manning's going to be really good next year, and I know that he's got some new weapons, too. Obviously, Cam Coleman being the number one guy, so I think Texas is going to be a really, really tough matchup, but certainly I think Oklahoma's got a better chance in that game this year than they did this last year when they, you know, had a quarterback with a broken hand. Hopefully, Mateer's healthy in this one.
All right, George, hey, before you go, can you tell our audience how to follow you and how to find all your work over at Sooner Scoop? You guys do a hell of a job. The written content, video content, audio content, and I think your post games with you and Eddie, unfiltered, on the field, that's some of the best content in the entire SEC. How can the listeners find it?
Yeah, we like to let it rip on the post game show. But you can find us on YouTube, Sooner Scoop. Go to Soonerscoop.com. You can find all my written content, and then obviously social media, X. You can just find me at my name, George Stoia, STOIA.